Welcome to Cryptic Picnic, a podcast where cozy conversations unfold over episodes of intrigue, discovery, and laughter.
Hosted by two ghouls and former co-workers turned long-distance friends, Cryptid Picnic is sure to satisfy your appetite for the strange and peculiar. To assist in the evangelizing the still pagan Germans, those heathens.
Those dang heathens!
There was a special oil that exuded from her body, and that particular oil was bottled and sold as a cure-all for ailments.
That was her bodily fluids from decomposition! Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cryptic Picnic. I am your co-host, Ivy, and with me is the one, the only, drumroll, please.
Are you going to say your cat? I'm going to be like, it's Jinx, my yeah. cat.
And then that's it. Carla, sorry, you do not matter, okay?
It's fine. I'll just sit over here with my own cat.
So, Carla, tell us, what are you sipping on right now?
Yes. So I actually have a little bit of wine today. It's a different today's recording. It's a little bit
of wine. Carla's going crazy. I'm so sorry. So, in the, one of our, previous episodes, I used a air horn sound effect. Carla, you have not heard that yet because that episode has not come out yet. And I was so tempted to put it in again, but it's going to be really hard for me to not throw in air horn sound effect, like, every single episode.
Ooh, I was going to ask you a very specific question.
Uh-huh.
So, when you listen to a new podcast, what order do you listen to the episodes in?
Okay. Well, I'm a little bit of a sinner. Some podcasts, if I usually will be introduced to a new podcast. There's a topic I want to learn more about. Oh, look, this podcast covered it. I'll just listen to like any random episode. But if it's a podcast I really like, then I'll go back and start chronologically. But sometimes I do go backwards. Like if it's a podcast that like you don't really need to listen to chronologically, if they don't give banter or backstories, it's just like straight to the point, then I'll just jump around. But
interesting. Yeah. So I am a definite, I want to start at episode one and go to wherever they're at. So for some podcasts, that's kind of a lot. And if they have over like 100 episodes, I do skip. But I definitely start at the very beginning. So this is episode 5. And it's actually going to be a little bit of a continuation from episode 3. So if you haven't listened to episode 3, it is about a little bit about springtime and Easter traditions and the Swedish, oh my gosh.
Swedish?
The Swedish. The Swedish Spring Witch. So if you haven't listened to that episode and you want to know about those things, then go listen to that episode.
Me and my pink drink are...
Ooh, yes, what are you drinking? I'm so sorry.
Yeah, well, I have for our picnic today, I'm blowing through... Okay. I'm trying to support other like small coffee shops and local coffee shops, but I always get a plethora of gift cards. And so I'm still trying to blow through some gift cards. So I did go treat myself to a venti pink drink from Starbucks. No strawberry inclusions. Add a couple pumps of vanilla. Bada boom, bada bing. And
oh,
I'm ready.
You even do special orders.
Yes.
You're like, it is a special order.
It is. And so I am very ready to learn some more about Swedish folklore
Swedish tradition. This is definitely a tradition. It is one of the, so aside from Easter being a big holiday, this is one of the other celebrations in springtime, and it is called Varbori.
Sort of.
It is a Swedish tradition. If you want me to tell you the full name, I'm going to do my best, everyone. So bear with me. Varborgs massofaten.
Okay, I'm
Varborgs massofaten is is one word, and it's like Varboris, like mass evening.
Oh.
And it specifically is better known as like the last night of April. It's a Swedish tradition that celebrates the ending of winter, the beginning of spring. And it is kind of a big deal.
Okay.
It's kind of a big deal. And it's not just in Sweden. There are these types of celebrations all over different parts of Europe, different regions. Mm-hmm. And each region obviously celebrates a little bit in their own way. Sweden, this is such a big celebration for students because it's their first taste of summer.
So is there some drinking perhaps involved?
There, I keep getting wink winks when I talk to Swedes about it because it's supposed to be kind of like it is the time when this might be the first taste, the first beer that someone has during Valborg as a celebration.
Oh.
So nudge nudge.
Woohoo! Air horn! Wah, 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 wah.
And so these tend to be parties too, where at dusk there's a bonfire that's lit and people gather around. There might be speeches and performances. There might be songs mm-hmm. to be sung and food to be had. And it's specifically about warming after the cold winter and welcoming in the spring to a brighter future.
Oh, that's nice.
So it's really sweet. It's a really sweet. Mm-hmm. And then traditionally it was to ward off evil spirits. So, you know, a little witchy, a little...
As they so often are.
And
gotta keep those witches away.
But now, like, it's very much a celebration of spring. It's a time when people have started, you know, the cold has really started shedding and people can actually start wearing, like, their thick sweaters again and like their jackets out instead of just like their giant coats and hats. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So I want you to think back in time because that's where we're going to go today. I'm going to talk a little bit. Time traveling. I'm going to tell a little bit of a backstory as to maybe where, it's not a maybe, it's like most likely where like these festivities derived from.
Uh-huh.
So there is one thing I do want to give a little note. So my husband tells me that the first official record of a Swedish king is from the 900s.
So a little while ago.
So just over 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, that's all.
And so kings and kingdoms and people are obviously, they exist. They existed mm-hmm. before that time. But it's well known that some of those stories are a bit more exaggerated and,
a little bit mythologized.
There's exaggerated feats like massive strength and... you know, just being like overly giant. And so,
we do love to embellish the past a little bit.
So there is an understanding that there were kingdoms and kings, and there were people in general that existed before this time frame. And maybe that time frame was a little bit exaggerated. So those before then, the ones that predate the officialized records of Swedish kings, are nicknamed the Fairy Tale Kings.
Okay.
As a way to maybe acknowledge that, you know, they existed, but we don't really know as much about them because history.
Yeah, take some of their stories with a grain of salt, maybe.
And so then, with that in mind, we are going further back in time.
Oh, good.
So that was the 900s. We are going to go back even further to the 600s. This is the 21st century, and I'm taking us back to the 7th.
Just a wee step back in time.
So during this time in Europe and Scandinavia, there was suggested that in modern time, we understand that at that particular time in history, that probably about half of Europe's population died as a result of a plague.
Yeah.
It disappeared at some time into the 700s, so into the 8th century. Mm-hmm. And after 750, there was not a plague that appeared again in Europe, at least to that magnitude, until the Black Death of the 14th century. So, good time.
Yeah, sounds good, great. We love events of mass death. It's part of life, and we got to live through one, not to the same extent at all, but, you know.
Well, this gets a little bit, I guess, more positive, more blessed, if you will, because in the 8th century, at the very beginning of the 700s, 710, the person that I'm talking about, named Walpurga, was born.
Oh.
She was born in Dumonia, which is roughly corresponds with Devon. It's like during a period that would then later become the Anglo-Saxon England. So think like Southwest England of modern day. And it was said that she was born of Richard the Pilgrim. So Richard the Pilgrim was written that he was most likely an under king somewhere in the West Saxon area. So somewhere in England, in that, like, what would be now known as England. And supposedly he had children with a woman who would be only known as Wuna of Wessex.
Okay, what a name.
I know. It's because she's a saint also.
Oh, Wuna. Ayo.
The things that are known about Wuna is that she was a noblewoman and a saint, but her real name seems to have been lost over time. I attempted to find it, so if anybody can find it, that would be super. But it seems like she has simply been known as Wuna of Wessex since the Middle Ages.
I mean, if you go back to even just like the 1800s, you still have women who their names weren't ever documented because it was just like Mrs. and then the husband's name. So, I mean, I'm not at all shocked that no one might have recorded her name. At least not that survived.
Name's lost. It's fine.
I mean, a female saint, we know how suspicious that is after my episode on the Malleus Maleficarum.
I think it works great. I think it's just a nice step into, you know, she was a female saint. She was a female saint.
Good for her.
Wuna actually means joyful one. Such a sweet, sweet note. Though it's a claim. This has also been claimed. There are historians who disclaim this. So this is, again, once again, everything being taken as just like a grain of salt. Things, some people think it's true. Some people don't think it's true. So it's also said, it's also another claim that she could have been the sister of the English Benedictine monk named Boniface. And he's pretty famous as a significant founder of missionary work during the 8th century, so during this time frame anyway. So Richard the Pilgrim and his sons would go off on a pilgrimage to Rome. And before he would leave that for that trip, he would leave Walpurga, who was then only 11 years old.
Okay.
To the abbess of a double monastery at Wimborne Abbey in Dorset. So a double monastery, do you know what a double monastery is? Because I didn't know the significance, like what that meant.
I think my experience in watching Time Team has helped me understand them a little bit more. Very educational show. Doesn't it have like monks and nuns?
Yes.
Yeah, it has monks and nuns, because oftentimes weren't they like separated more, but like this one's got both.
So they are separated. They are combining these separate communities together so that they have like one institution that shares a church and maybe some other facilities as well. But it does seem like they're still like separate. Like over here are the monks and over here are the nuns. They just use a lot of the same places. So she was actually at this abbey for 1 year, or around 1 year, when she received word that her father had unfortunately perished at Lucca, which is in Italy. So then we have his sons who buried him at one of the churches and then completed the pilgrimage that they were going on to begin with to Rome, where they both also became very ill. So it could have been the plague, but it also could have been malaria. Again, sources kind of have it could be this or that. But they were sick. They were not doing great. So the brothers are named Winibald and Willibald. Those are the names. So I'm going to call one Winnie and the other one Willie. Wait, because
what's the name of this monastery?
The monastery that she
or this abbey?
The abbey was the Wilbourne Abbey of Dorset.
Because these names, especially those two sons, it sounds really familiar. I'm pretty sure I literally watched a Time Team episode where they might have been trying to find that exact abbey.
To find the location.
I think they found potentially the king, but it was really hard for them to determine because there were, in like this burial, there was both pagan and Christian elements, and they were trying to determine like who it might have been. But I think this might be the same family.
Ooh, interesting.
Because him and those two sons' names, they were like, was it him? This could have been one of his sons. But look, there's Christian elements in the burial, and that doesn't match up with this person. Anyways, I'm geeking out because I'm like, wait, I think I might have seen this on Time Team.
Time Team.
One of my favorite shows. Continue, Carla. Continue.
So I am going to nickname these brothers Winnie and Willie just because I'm going to talk about them a little bit more with Valperga, and it makes a little bit more sense if I don't have to say Winibald and Willibald because
yep,
there's a lot of balds happening. So
lots of balds.
So the brothers recovered and Winnie stayed in Rome to study, and the other brother, Willie, he set out for the Holy Land. He traveled around for 7 years, and then he came back to Italy. He became a monk at Monte Cassino, which is, like, supposed to be a really, really big deal. And then he returned to England sometime around 730. And apparently there's a third brother whose name I could not find information about. I couldn't really find anything about him. Mm-hmm. But regardless of if they actually had another brother or not, it seemed like he went back to England and collected people and then returned back to Rome to begin like his new monastic life, his new holy life.
Uh-huh.
And during all of this time, during these 7 years that were going on, Valperga was back at the abbey in Wimborne, where she was educated by the nuns and she would eventually become a nun. These nuns were skilled in copying and ornating manuscripts. So reading, writing, calligraphy was a really big deal. One of the other things that these nuns were celebrated for was Opus Anglicanum, which is very fine needlework, utilizing gold and silver threads on super rich velvet linens, velvet and linens. And it was often so decorated with jewels and pearls, and the embroidery was in such great demand across Europe that these fabrics were even used as diplomatic gifts, which is, they have proof of that. Like, there are those out there.
Yeah.
So Valperga spent 26 years as a member of this community, being a part of doing all of these things, learning manuscripts, everything. Okay, so in 737, Valperga's uncle, her mother's brother, who once again was supposedly Boniface of Rome. Mm-hmm. He was in Rome and he was recruiting his nephews to assist him in this religious work that he had going on down in Germany. So Winnie arrived in Germany, and this is supposedly proven that it was on the 30th of November of 740. And he had been ordained a priest and he was in charge of seven churches. Willie arrived in a different place in Germany and was ordained, of course, by Boniface on the 22nd of July the next year, so 741, and he began missionary work all around the area. And then Valperga traveled with her brothers Winnie and Willie to Francia, which is now known as Franconia, and Württemberg, to assist in the evangelizing the still pagan Germans, those heathens.
Those dang heathens.
So some people, some sources actually claim that she wrote her own brother Willibald's Vita, which is like a biography. And his account in Latin of his travels to Palestine. But it was later determined to be false and was written by Hugeberg of Heidenheim. Walpurga became a nun at a Dhamma monastery. And this particular monastery happened to be founded by her own brother, Willy. And he appointed her the successor. So following his death in 751, she became the abbess of the monastery. And then upon Winnie's death, in 760, she was also succeeded as the superintendent of the overall Heidenheim monastery. So she spent the last parts of her years like being the superintendent over this double monastery. So Walpurga died on the 25th of February, and the year is actually very unclear because of records.
Mm-hmm.
And she was buried in Heidenheim. So to this day, it's somewhere around the mid-770s, so it could have been like 775 or 76 or 77 or 78 or 79. It was sometime in there.
Uh-huh.
All of the places that I checked had a different name, and some of them even said it was this year or this year, so at some point, it's so long ago at this point, it does, you don't need an exact date anyway.
Yeah.
but I also, so I don't want to talk too much about this in general, but I can just tell you that I actually found this, like, he was like a Catholic priest, and he wrote this entire essay about Walpurga and history that he has of her and like has been able to find. And so it dove into letters that were found, which is how some of this is even known, and accounts that were written by other nuns because they kept journals. And it was so interesting.
Is it all online somewhere?
It was. I might actually still have a link, and I can, it's one of the places I use, and I don't know where my link is. It might be in my sources because I saved a bunch of my sources, but it was really interesting. I was like, what in the world is happening? But that's like how they suspect that she even learned different types of music and instruments. So once again, she died. She wasn't canonized and officially declared a saint until May 1st of 870. So almost a year, 100 years later, almost 100 years later, only a year. That's only a year. It's a blink of an eye. 100 years later, she was canonized, and since that was on May 1st, it is said to have become part of the celebration of Walpurgis Day, Saint Walpurgis Day, and Walpurga was a woman, so she ended up becoming a female saint who is then celebrated all across Europe and different parts of Scandinavia. And that has continued, that tradition of Walpurgis Day has continued all the way till now. So.
Wow. What did she do that, was it just her, like, dedication to her faith that elevated her to sainthood? Or was it, like, her status and who she was related to, do you know? Or did she, like, perform something? Did she heal people? Or
it seemed like it might have been both. Both things in general, just the fact that she was such a holy person who devoted herself at a very young age to a nunnery and just continued that faith all the way into her death. Because if she was there from the time that she was 11 at some abbey, from the time that she was 11 to the time that she died, that's like 60 years.
That's
70
some dedication.
Years?
That's, yeah.
To the holy word, to spreading the word, to missionary work, etc. One of the other really fun things that I wanted to share, which is, I am going to joke about just a little bit, but it is something that is so big in holy circles, and that is saint oil. Do you know anything about saint oil? Saint's oil?
No, I don't.
So After Saint Valperga was sainted and buried, there was a special oil that exuded from her body, and that particular oil was bottled and sold as a cure-all for ailments.
That was her bodily fluids from decomposition.
Or it was a gift from God.
All right. I mean, like,
sipping not- wine because it's none of my business.
It's not the weirdest saint story. Like, there's that saint that said that she married Jesus and she wore an invisible ring that was made of his foreskin. So, I mean,
ooh, that's gonna be real fun to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. And there's like saints that would like, they were elevated to sainthood because they would like heal the sick by eating their boogers and vomit and stuff to take on the illness. So, I mean, bodily secretions being bottled and like sold as cure-alls, like that is the least shocking thing I've heard of like a weird saint thing. I've touched a dead saint. Have I told you that?
No.
Well, okay. She wasn't officially made a saint. It was last year. I'm totally spacing on her name, but there's a small town not too far from Kansas City where, you know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, she died. She had been buried. This woman at this, I think they were a nunnery, maybe? I can't fully remember, but
I think she was a nun, and they put her on display.
Yeah, when they had to excavate her body, I think she was going to be buried somewhere else, they noticed, oh, wow, she's not nearly as decomposed as we would expect her to be, which to a lot of people is a sign of, you know, this is a most holy person who wouldn't even decay because they were so holy. She was put on display, but people got to go visit her. You could touch her and you could bottle her grave dirt. And again, I don't think she was officially listed as a saint, but she was certainly being treated like one. And so me and a coworker and their sister, Zell, you know, Zell, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
We drive down there and we go touch her and get her grave dirt. So, and it was great. It was great. It was a very interesting experience.
Sister Wilhelmina Lancaster's body was exhumed and found to be incorrupt, a sign of holiness that later justifications for sainthood. And it was the reason why this was so wild was because her body had almost no signs of decay after 4 years of from her death, which was, I think, the really wild part about all of that.
Mm-hmm. I will say there have been a lot of people who are like familiar with forensics and like human decomp and stuff who have said that it's not that unheard of for that to just naturally happen depending on the time of year they were buried, what's the mineral composition in the soil. So I don't know. I mean, who knows what was actually going on with her, but it was cool.
But yeah, the oil of saints, this was not something that I knew because I'm not Catholic, or I'm not really Christian either, but it is said, it's also known as manna of saints, and it's like the aromatic liquid of the healing properties, very much like a healing water, holy water, or a myrrh. Uh-huh. It's said to have flowed or still flows from relics that are and their burial places, especially from those who have high anoints in the church, such as saints.
I kind of want some.
I don't know, but Saint Valperga was famous among the oil of saints, essentially because of the stone slab that surrounded the plate, which like rested the relics of Saint Valperga in her church in Bavaria, Germany. The fluids would get caught in a silver cup and then placed on the slab just for this purpose. So it was very, very particularly done. The sisters would collect this secretion in small vials and distribute them among the faithful. Obviously, they wouldn't say no to probably
someone slid a 20 across the table. And
what's the word I'm looking for? Because I don't feel like nuns wouldn't do it. they would do it for like maybe a holier. They're looking for a donation.
Ah, yeah. They're like, oh, this is free of cost, but we would love a donation. I mean, I'd do it. So.
So that is such an interesting little tidbit. It's also rumored. And so once again, this has never been confirmed in the last 1,000 years that there was a possibility that Valpurga was a saint. Oh, I'm so sorry.
No way.
No way.
No way. First time hearing this.
There's a possibility that Valpurga was a princess. She was somebody high in the what would be known as the English court of the time. And according to the history, her father, Richard the Pilgrim, was most likely an underking, and that means that he was like an inferior or a subordinate to the king. And that could even possibly mean that he was a viceroy. And a viceroy is somebody who is governing a specific area for the king. So he's been entrusted to oversee a land, a piece of land. And so that doesn't necessarily sound like that she is a princess. But if her mother truly was also a noblewoman who was then later also a saint, even if this person's name was lost, the fact that she was a noblewoman, if that is true, that would make her higher in court of the time.
Yeah.
In standings. So
Princess Saint Valpurga, I love it.
So the oils, secretions of bodies. Would you use secretions from a long past saint to cure your ailments? Would you do it?
I mean, if it's a last resort and I got nothing else to lose, I would consider. But
well, and so the other reason why I gave you that backstory is because also during this time, these entire areas were getting over a plague. So much of people's family and friends probably perished.
And people were desperate for a means to cure anything. I mean, people were trying all sorts of, you know, other snake oils and things. Not calling the saint oil a snake oil, but people were willing to try literally anything and do anything they could to get their hands on this kind of anything that could potentially heal or cure it, so, or prevent it. So,
since her death, May Day was the day of her anointment as a saint, was the celebration of the feast of Valpurga, the feast of Valburgis, a Saint Valpurgis. And since then, it's been moved to the day before May Day. So there's Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And most of the time, the last day of spring has become Saint Valpurgis Day. And these celebrations are with different types of bonfires and celebrations. In certain Gaelic cultures in general, the evening of the 30th is the celebration of Beltane, which translates to lucky fire.
Yeah, I love Beltane.
And it's very similar to Welsh Cal in May, which marks the start of the summer season. And that's been as far back, like, that's first attested back to the 900s. The celebration mainly focused on symbols used to bless cattle, other livestock, as they moved from the spring, or from their, like, winter and spring to their summer pastures. Mm-hmm. And this has even continued into the 19th century, so many, many years later. There's some noted that the cattle would have to jump over the fire. And the other reason why this was such a huge thing is because fire was known to ward away witches and witchcraft and fairy folk and all of the mystical aspects that might be coming to haunt you or...
Yeah, coming to get your cattle or something.
So Sweden actually does have another tradition, and I'm going to just throw it in there because it's smaller. But it's called koslap, which means cow release. And it happens every spring on farms all around Sweden. Some of the, there's like a huge dairy company in Sweden, and they actually have little festivals with games and stuff that people can go to, and they'll release the cows.
Is this when they like release them into the pastures for the first time? They're like jumping around all happy.
Yes.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
And so they'll be released from their paddocks, and it's, I've been to one, and it is such an experience. I guess I've never experienced this being from the Midwest, but cows, I didn't realize how excited cows can get over going outside.
They jump around like they're like dogs. They're like big, weird shaped dogs.
It is so wild. They'll like mini stampede out, and they're jumping all over the place, and it's super cute. They just seem so happy to be outside.
Would you say that it's complete and utter joy?
Yes. I wanted to say a joke, but I couldn't think of anything.
Wow.
It's dairy delicious. Like, that doesn't...
Comedy podcast too.
The only thing I could think of, and I was like, that's not funny. So, in conclusion, although this is just a little taste of a backstory from a saint that has pulled into modern day celebrations, depending on where you're from, depending on what region you're from, or country or religion, these different areas celebrate in different ways and how they wish. And so, Valpurgis is a day, and Valbori is a Swedish tradition.
I really enjoy learning these histories because I think for a lot of us, like in, you know, modern day, it's easy to, you grow up with these traditions and celebrations, and it's easy to just not really like look into, why do we light bonfires? Why do we eat a feast on this day? Why this? Why that? Where'd the name come from? And so I really enjoy like learning the history to these things that so many of us partaken but have never cared to really look further into.
I think it's really interesting too, because I would ask, and I think that it's really interesting to hear like, oh yeah, like there was a saint and she was like totally against illnesses and she did such a great job helping the poor and helping the sick, and so now they have a celebration over her, and it's supposedly her body secretions can ward off witchcraft and evil. And now it's just like a celebration of enjoying each other's company, of enjoying spring, of enjoying time being together. It's such a time of community. And I also think that one of the most interesting things about learning about Swedish culture and Scandinavian culture and European culture further than what I did when I was growing up is that I think I realize sometimes how I don't know that, like, there's not as much tradition in the United States in the same way.
Yeah, we're very commercialized in how we look at and celebrate the few major holidays that we do have. And I feel like we don't have nearly as many of these, like, celebrations, people getting together and... It's just more about like, okay, you've got, you know, go buy a whole bunch of expensive like Easter candy and Easter eggs. And it's all about like the money, buy a whole bunch of Christmas presents, buy a whole bunch of Halloween decorations. And I do wish that we were a little more focused on just that being together, communities coming together, celebrating together. I do wish we had more of that.
But we have the 4th of July.
We have Toyotathon.
Toyotathon!
Yeah. I will say the only holiday that I do appreciate, like, that's been, like, quote-unquote, I don't know if Americanized is the right word, but I do love, I think I've mentioned this in a previous episode, how we celebrate Halloween here. I do appreciate, like, our melting pot of what's infused and become Halloween. Like, very inspired by, like, things that, like, Irish immigrants brought here, but it's evolved into something very different. And our Halloween is very big and epic compared to a lot of other Halloweens.
Like, so true.
Like, any friends, people that I talk to, like, in the UK, they're so jealous of how far out we do go for Halloween. So I do love that side of things, but...
Is it because of Mean Girls? Like...
Yes,
specifically... Because Halloween's, like, that one day a year.
Mean Girls came out, and then that created Halloween in America.
That's the real lore. The real lore of Halloween. It was all created by Tina Fey. All of it was created by Mean Girls.
Yep, that's based on no facts. Just trust me, bro.
So that is just a little bit of backstory. I'm sure I missed a few things. And if anybody has any comments to make, anything to add, any differences in their own types of traditions that they do in spring, I would love to hear about that. I'm sure Ivy would also.
Yes, I would. But I just looked outside. There's like a huge black dog that's just like real chill walking down the sidewalk of the street that I live on, but it's really massive. And I'm like, is this actually a dog or is this like a creature of folklore? Because I mean, we're sitting here having a cryptic picnic. Like, of course, I'm going to look outside and be like, what is, like, is this a wolf man outside?
Do not follow the black dog. Do not follow the black dog.
I may or may not follow the black dog.
So that's all I got.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And stay tuned for the following credits of the episode. And I don't know how many people actually, like, listen to the very end, but sometimes we have bloopers at the end. That can be that can be worth hanging around for.
As always, thank you for listening. We invite you to post some of your own fascinating folklore or delicious recipes for a treat in the comments. If you leave us a scary or a silly review wherever you listen to your podcast, it really helps us. Follow us on all socials. We are Cryptid Picnic Podcast on Instagram, Threads, and Facebook.
You can also follow me on my own Instagram at it's Ivy Boyd and TikTok at Ivy_Boyd. I promise it's a good time for even more spooky content. And join us next time for another installment of Cryptic Picnic, where we will bring you more stories of intrigue, discovery, and laughter.
Join us or else.
This podcast is researched, produced, and edited by both Ivy and Carla. Music is by Dimitri Terrace from Pixabay.
Now it's time for a reel of delightful mishaps and unexpected moments. Let's dive into some bloopers.
Do we want to talk about how you think it sounds like you're saying cryptid in the beginning? And I kind of hear it. If I think cryptid, I'll hear cryptid. If I think cryptic, I hear cryptic. And so I feel like that's kind of perfect for us. Or should we just not say anything and wait for someone to say something?
I don't know, because I swear that I said cryptic picnic, but then I'm like listening back on it and I was like, no, I said cryptid. I said cryptid. What do I do? And then I was like, we have to record, like, re-record everything.
I mean, if we wanted to, we could re-record your segment in the beginning and then I can go back and just like put that in and re-upload them to Audio Boom and it would be like, it never happened.
We could just make one of those noises like cryptic picnic. And then, like, go back to talking.
Cryptic with a C. No, I like it because it kind of, like, I want people, like, people might be like, wait, did they say cryptid? I thought this was cryptic. And then they'll look at their phone and be like, no, it does say cryptic. And we're really just going to mess with people's minds. And I'm kind of okay with that.
It's like a mind bend. We're Inception in cryptids instead.
Yeah, and
the
Cryptid Picnic is a fun idea. If we ever do like a cryptid series, we can cross out the C and put a D and it would be Cryptid Picnic.
I still think having a cryptid picnic, but it's still cryptic picnic just with cryptids sounds so fun.
Let's do it.
I could see them all, like, imagine this. So think back to the cartoons of Cartoon Network in like the late 90s, early 2000s. But when they were doing the commercials where they're like at the laundromat and they're just like washing their clothes, that's what I imagine, but in cryptid form. So they're just like,
there's a little squonk who's like crying because he washed reds in with his whites and they turned out pink and he cries and turns himself into a puddle. And
like the Yeti has to like shove his way through the door.
Yeti and Bigfoot are using those, oh my gosh, they're like the dryer sheets are specific for like if you have pets to trap more of the pet hair on it.
Oh, that'd be perfect.
Wait.
They have like special, they talk about the shampoo they use all the time. They're like,
someone,
what is it?
Write this down.
Like, could you just imagine like Bigfoot and Yeti just like meeting up once a year to go on like a ski trip and they just like get high like by the fire and they're just like chill.
Whoa. I mean, Bigfoot gives stoner vibes.
Right.
So, I mean, find any stoner's car and they're going to have a Bigfoot sticker or decal on it somewhere amidst all their stickers. So
it's a way that, so it's called, oh my God, I skipped over the whole point of me telling you this.
Rewind.
I'm doing great. Okay.
You're doing great, sweetie.
So understanding.
Just keep sipping your wine. You're doing great.
I know. Sip. Hold on, I have to remember how to say this word. Benedictine. That's it.
Yeah.
Benedictine. I wrote it out phonetically and I still messed it up.
I know some stuff. I know Benedictine.
Who was then only 11 years old.
Okay.
To the abbess at a double monastery that was in Wimborne at the blah blah blah. I messed up all those names. I'm so sorry. And they were also celebrated for opus. I don't remember how to say this word. It's Latin. Give me one second. Anglicanum.
Anglicanum.
I'll send it to you. Do you know what I mean? Why my brain, I was like, it's not what I'm trying to say.
Anglicanum.
It's a Latin. Opus is in front of it, if you want to know. Which I can say opus.
Let's see what the internet says.
Opus Anglicanum.
Anglicanum. Wait.
Opus Anglicanum.
Opus Anglicanum.
Anglicanum.
Opus Anglicanum.
That sounds much better than what I was trying to say. Okay. I did not put the pronunciation for that. So